Hello and welcome to the Make Ideas Reality Podcast. I'm Justin, aka the Garage Avenger. Active networking is vital to professional growth, and it's no different in the creative and maker communities. Networking is often confused with just the business side and the selling side of things. Networking, though, is actually much more than that. It's about building long-term relationships and providing value and good friendship over time. My guest today, John Graziano from Graz Makes, talks about his journey of how he found himself alongside some of the maker elite, such as Paul Jackman and Jimmy Duresta. We also talk about video production and how Graz's job as a video producer has ruined Game of Thrones for him. And we learn some small tips and tricks about how you can think about producing your videos better and looking at the ways that we can produce better storytelling. I think there's a lot in this episode. I hope you guys are ready to enjoy. Let's do this. Today's guest and I look like we could be related, but my mother swears his father and her never dated. His humor and personality got him in the door. He's close with Jimmy Jackman and many more. It's not what you know that makes you stand out. It's who you know beyond any doubt. Welcome to the show, John Graziano from Graz Makes.
It's Graziano.
Oh my God. I even wrote it right. Like it was.
Oh, that was. I was gonna say that was a beautiful poem, but yeah, no, it's fine. My mom gets my last name wrong too. It's totally fine. So does my wife.
Sure.
Yeah. So sure. It's totally fine.
I even wrote it right. Like I literally, phonetically wrote it.
Yeah, literally, like it's a 50-50 chance that most people, I won't say 50-50 in most, but it's a 50% chance people will get my name wrong. There's a lot of vowels and things and yeah, don't worry about it. It's okay.
Graziano, far out. All right. Fair enough, Graz. You're Graz now. All right. Yeah, today,
that's why I changed it to Graz, because after the Graz, it's like, oh no, a lot of letters.
I think everyone that's listened to this show regularly knows that I balls up last names all the time. No, so
it's totally fine.
All right, guys. today we're going to be talking about networking, and we're talking about networking today because Graz has found himself sort of surrounded by, let's call them, the maker elite. And I'm going to probe him on, you know, who he had to sleep with to get himself in that position.
Who I had to probe.
And we're going to also be talking about video production, as Graz's day job is producing videos for Total Boat. And we all know that Total Boat is a big player in the maker community now, which is really interesting to see. And I'm hoping he's going to share with us some tips and tricks and maybe even just some different ways of thinking about video content production. And let's see what happens from there. But before we get into those topics, I'm going to let Graz introduce himself and give us a little elevator pitch and tell us what he is and what he's all about.
I am John Graziano, or otherwise known as John Graziano. I am from the YouTube channel Graz Makes. And yeah, I just kind of do a bunch of stuff. I like to, I started out knife making, and then I just kind of my short attention span went, okay, I'm bored of that this week. Let me try woodworking. Okay, I'm bored with that this week. So let me try leatherworking. Let me try this. Let me try that. And so once that kind of snowballed, it's no looking back. So kind of a jerk of all trades and master of none.
Did you just say jerk of all trades?
I did.
My God.
I did. Either that or jack off all trades.
Yeah. It's so true. That should be a t-shirt.
Yeah. Which one? Both?
Yeah, both. You should have on one side jerk of all trades and on the jack of all trades. Anyway. Let's talk about networking, because you have a bit of an interesting story with how you sort of got yourself involved with some of these, as I call them, maker elite. You've become quite close with Paul Jackman and Jimmy Dresta and a whole heap of other guys. So I wanted to sort of get into your bit of your story of how that all happened. And I think we'll start it basically where it happened was your apartment. Is that right?
Or should I say Paul Jackman's old apartment. I think it's been six or seven years now. It's been a while. My wife and I were looking to get a new apartment and move from our old apartment. And this area in Massachusetts where we live is right near Salem, Massachusetts, which is a very famously old town, which is a beautiful town right on the coast. And so we wanted to move around that area. And we found this apartment online that's literally like 5 minutes away from Salem. So we were like, oh, let's check the place out, see if it's nice. We saw it. We loved it. So we moved in. And as we were moving in, the landlord was like, yeah, there's another couple down below you that very nice couple. And I think the guy has some sort of like YouTube channel that he like builds stuff with, like out of wood. She was kind of a little vague on it. And I was in my head, I was like, okay, what does he have? Like 100 subscribers. And then she was like, yeah, he's got like a wood shop in the basement and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And at the exact same time, I was getting really in like kind of the bug of knife making. I wanted to figure out how to actually like make knives from scratch.
Mm.
And so I was subscribed to one channel, and that was Make Magazine, because I used to like to do a lot of like Raspberry Pi stuff and programming, because I didn't have a lot of room to actually like build a shop. And so once I introduced myself to Paul, he was like, oh yeah, no, I have this YouTube channel, Jackman Works, or I think it was Jackman Carpentry at the time. So I looked it up and he had like 10,000 subscribers. And I was like, whoa, that's an impressive amount of subscribers. Cause like, I don't have any, like that's awesome.
Hmm.
And then around the same, he was super nice. He was like, if you want to use any of my tools, as long as I'm not down here, by all means have at it. I was like, sweet. Thanks, man. And so at the same time, around the exact same time that happened, Make released a video where this guy named Duresta made this big ass kitchen knife. And I was like, oh, this is perfect. This is how to do the whole process. And it's a kitchen knife. So I want to try to redo this so I can make some knives for our kitchen.
Hmm.
So as I watch it, I'm like, oh, this is awesome. This is perfect. This guy knows how to do all this stuff. So I scroll down and like the second comment is Paul Jackman. And I was like, what the hell? Is it like a glitch in the matrix? Like, how does that guy know this guy? And so I go back to Paul and I'm like, how do you know this Duresta guy? And he then explains to me, this guy's, he does everything. He can basically build everything. Sends me a bunch of links. Like everyone, you watch one, you get hooked. You wake up you kind of snap out of it at 4 a.m. and you're like, I just watched like 40 Duresta videos. Where am I?
Yeah.
And so that just kind of snowballed there. And so do you want me to keep going as far as how I met Jimmy too? Or
yeah, well, let's talk a little bit about Paul. I mean, you guys, you know, you're obviously coming down there and chatting and getting to know him. And then you start like frothing off Jimmy Duresta videos.
Yeah, like with Paul, obviously, if anyone has seen any of his videos, he's a very, very dry humor, very good straight man. And it's like, you don't see him crack a smile a lot, because like that's part of his humor, is like the straight guy, and it works really well in his channel. And I always thought he was like mad at me because I left like my laundry in the dryer and he wanted to do laundry. So I was like, oh, sorry, I didn't quite understand like his sense of humor at the point. But once he saw what I was doing, he was kind of interested in being like, oh, that's cool. You're making knives. That's really neat. How, like, he'd ask me like, oh, how are you doing that? Like, what kind of wood are you working on, or what kind of wood are you using? How are you shaping it? What tools are you using? And so we kind of opened a dialogue there. And then our friendship kind of evolved through that. And then his wife is awesome. And then got along great with my wife. And it was just kind of a really cool environment where it's kind of like, hey, what are you making today? Oh, are you working down there tonight? Cause like, I'd like to get down there whenever you're not. Totally cool. And he's like, oh yeah, I'm finishing up something. If you want to go down there, by all means, have at it. So it was a really cool, like almost like a very small commune of like-minded people who like to get their hands dirty.
Mm. So really, I mean, it was, he had just opened up his workshop for you.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, not a lot of people would kind of have that kind of mindset of like, oh, this stranger who just moved into our apartment. I don't know his skill set or anything, but sure, if you want to use a table saw, by all means. And it's like, that's pretty awesome that he got to do that, or he did that for me. And I'm definitely grateful for that.
Well, he does know where you live if
I know that's the one problem. Yeah. So if I break something, I'd be like, we gotta find a new apartment real quick.
Cause you end up he ends up moving out of there. And you, do you take over his workshop?
Yeah, it was like about, I think it was like a year and a half after we kind of moved in, I think, because his wife is in the Coast Guard, they kept having to move. And so they moved to Connecticut at that point. And so once they moved, we kind of moved into that, kind of took over that space. And then the upstairs neighbors didn't care. Like they didn't want a workshop. They were just like two college kids. So like, I was like, sweet, more space for me. Yeah. So after that happened, then I kind of replicated his setup where like he put the table saw and all that. Cause like, he's really good at figuring out the most efficient way of using a small space. Mm-hmm. And so I figured I'm not going to figure a better way than he did. So kind of set up the shop like he did. And then kind of once that happened, kind of really got into woodworking and kind of figuring that out too, like more than just like the basic, like I can make a birdhouse. And then, yeah, that evolved. And then we were there for, I think, another year or two. And then I think our landlord had kind of second thought of sharp objects spinning near fingers. And so she was like, I know I said you could have the shop, but through insurance, it's probably not the greatest idea. And as soon as that happened, I was like, okay, I'll just find a shop. And then luckily, I found a space literally 2 miles door to door in Salem, in downtown Salem. That was like the perfect spot. So everything kind of worked out well. So that was nice.
Hmm. And let's talk about networking. So, you know, you've met Paul, you've binged watched a whole heap of Jimmy Duresta videos, you know, and then how did you end up hanging out with Jimmy?
So, I mean, at that point, it's like, I mean, I think Derek has said the same thing. Like, I think his wife would make fun of him using the same line my wife said, would be like, oh, you're watching your boyfriend again, like watching all of his videos. I'm like, yeah, these are great videos. And then like, she kind of sat down and watched one, was like, oh, these are actually really fun to watch. Like, and now anytime new ones come out, hey Meg, come on in, Jimmy's got a new video. Oh, sweet.
Hmm.
But once you kind of watched that, it was like, oh, this is really cool. And then through my job at the time, which was Carolina and other shoe companies, we had a showroom in New York City, which was probably a 15-minute cab ride to Jimmy's old shop that was in the Lower East Side.
Hmm.
And him being Jimmy, like most people, like just text him, he'll answer you. And then one day when I was in New York, I just kind of like, as a fanboy, I think I tweeted him. I was like, hey, you around? Like, I'm like a fan. If I could swing by, that would be awesome. Check out the shop. He's like, yeah, absolutely. So like, I was like, oh, wow, this is really cool. So I took a cab down Lower East Side. I think it was a Clinton Ave. And I saw the bench he made. So I was sitting on the bench and then all of a sudden, like this guy just like pops out of the ground. He's like, John? I was like, yeah, hey, what's up? And he's like, come on in, I'll give you a tour. And so we just started talking. I had my video equipment with me and we just kind of connected through like video equipment, like showing him all this like fancy, like black magic stuff that my work had. And then he was just showing me the shop, all the stuff he was making at the time, which was like the coolest thing ever. It's like going to Willy Wonka's chocolate factory. And it was just really cool just to be like, wow, this, that was kind of like, I mean, no other time where you could like kind of see someone that you admire. You can't just like call up like, I don't know, Tom Hanks and be like, hey, Tom Hanks, you want to hang out? You're never going to get a response. And it was really cool and almost surreal to be like, I just watched your video where you made this axe and now the axe is right there and I'm in the shop. This is like the coolest thing. Mm. And so we ended up talking for like an hour, hour and a half. And I was like, I got to get to my train. He was like, yeah, anytime you're around, just give me a call. You can come back and hang out. I was like, oh, that's awesome. And then kind of told Paul, and Paul was like, yeah, he's like the nicest guy ever. I was like, he really is. And so after that, yeah, like we just kind of like, I don't know, we have a very similar sense of humor. And so like, I think the next time I saw him was the Making It 100 event. And I don't know if you want me to get into that right now, but that's how I kind of met Jimmy initially.
Yeah. So, I mean, Brett McAfee, he's also talked about, you know, Jimmy, because obviously he worked with Jimmy for 3 years. And, you know, he was it 5 episodes back now? I think it is. But yeah, I mean, he was talking about how Jimmy's workshop was just like this labyrinth of amazing stuff everywhere, you know, and there was always something to look at and enjoy if you're a fanboy. And the fact that he was just so approachable, like he just loved talking to people. And
yeah, it was like I actually was speaking to my wife Meg a couple of nights ago about that. Like it is a very weird, I don't say weird, but definitely he's a unique person when it comes to that, especially growing up in like New York, where they're kind of famous for being like standoffish and I'm from New York, don't mess with me. He was like the most welcoming, like, come on in. Like he was in like the Midwest of like, I just baked you pie. Come on in. Like, do you need anything? And he was like the most welcoming person in this city that's kind of known for their standoff nature, which made it even doubly cool, I guess.
Hmm. And how did you end up getting sort of, obviously you tweeted him, you visited him at his workshop, but like many, that's where it sort of normally ends. But that didn't quite end for you. Like, where did the relationship continue to blossom?
So I mean, after that, I mean, like I said, I think the next time, like, I was able to hang out was Making It 100, which happened to randomly be in Boston because I think Converse let them have the space for free. I mean, it could have been anywhere, but it just weirdly happened to be in Boston. And I think there was like a hangout before the actual event the night before, and he just rolled in, and like as soon as he saw me, he was like, "Oh, hey, what's going on, LaGraz?" Right? And I was like, "Oh, wow, you remember me?" He's like, "Yeah, of course. I won't forget that beard of yours." So like after that, like we just kind of like connected, like just from then we just kind of like hung out with a bunch of people, and then the next day they had the event. It was super cool to like meet all of these people that you meet online and actually see them in person and be like, oh wow, it's awesome to like meet you in person, shake your hand, give you a hug. And like after the event, we went to a bar, everyone was hanging out, and then Jimmy comes up to me and he's like, hey, you make knives, right? Like you make knives? Sorry, I just had coffee. And he was like, I want to introduce you to another guy. This is Derek. Derek, you're from Malden, right? I think you used to live in the same town or close by. And I'm like, yeah. So I now meet this guy named Derek. And then I don't know how much you want me to talk about that, but so that was like the kind of the second time I met Jimmy. He kind of met Derek at the same time I did. And they definitely connected. And then Derek and I connected. And so now it's like, and then Jackman was, I don't know if he was there the first night, but he was there the second night, and he showed up, and then it was just kind of like we all kind of were mingling and kind of like just hanging out there, and I guess the kind of relationship or friendship started there.
Well, that's interesting that you mentioned that, you know, Jimmy brought another, like a third person in, Derek, you know, to sort of connect with you as well. Like, you know, so that was interesting to hear that, because I think when you have people connecting, they often want to help, like networking, they often want to help each other. So obviously, like, he saw that you could provide some sort of value to Derek, so he wanted to make sure that you guys connected. And I think that's probably part of what makes the network thing really work, is making sure you're providing value for everyone. And that seemed like Jimmy was that instigator to make sure that you two got together to make sure that, you know, and then the circle just goes round and round, right?
Yeah, I think at the time, I think Derek's son wanted to know how to make a knife, which then I think Derek was interested in making knives. And having that seed in Jimmy's head, he was like, oh, this is perfect. You guys live super close together. At some point, connect and then see what happens. And then, I mean, meeting Derek, he's a super nice dude. I mean, sorry, my cat's going crazy. Super nice dude. We connected instantly. And then, like, after the night was done, he was like, I was like, so where in Malden do you live? And then he told me, and I was like, I think that's pretty close to where I used to live, like a couple years ago. So I was like, do you need a ride home? And he's like, yeah, that would be awesome. So as he's kind of directing me, he's like, take a left here, take a right here. And I'm like, dude, this is like two blocks away from my old apartment, which is just weird to know that this guy was there and I had no idea. I'm sure our paths crossed at the grocery store and had no idea. And then like the butterfly effect happened. And now our paths have intersected that evening. And then it just kind of developed from there, which is kind of crazy.
Mm.
When you kind of make the timeline and connect everything, it's kind of mind blowing.
Yeah, well, I mean, because it sounds a little bit like coincidence, you know, all these things just lining up.
Yeah.
But I feel like, you know, these guys are pretty busy dudes. You know, they've all got heaps of stuff going on. And where did you actively like pursue them, or was it the relationship you had with Derek, which then allowed you more time to be spent with the other guys, for example?
I mean, just strictly through our address, Paul and I would kind of just see each other all the time. Like, I'd see him drive. I just wave. If I like went to go get beer, I'd see his car, his Element drive by, I'd wave to him and just stuff like that. And obviously that's a lot easier than trying to hang out and make time when people have families and stuff.
Right.
But as soon as I met Derek, I mean, we just kind of connected because I guess just kind of the Boston thing. And I mean, he was trying to start his own channel, and me having knowledge of video, I'm more than happy to lend my, whatever I can help, my video knowledge, and just get in teaching him how to make a knife. And then while we were doing that, he was developing a relationship with Jimmy, and we would stay in touch every once in a while. And then, what was this? Like 3 years ago now, when Jimmy had the teepee build at his house, Derek was like, hey, I'm going to Jimmy's for the weekend. Do you want to come? And I was like, yeah, that would be awesome. And then it ended up being this kind of like mini maker meetup where like Laura Kampf was there, Andy Berkey was there, Jackman showed up, Tim Sway was there. So it was kind of like, to me, the like first round draft picks of the maker community that I was like, oh, this is really cool. Like,
how the fuck did I get here?
Yeah, I feel like I shouldn't be here. I like won a contest to be here. But it was really cool because it's like we helped Jimmy like build a teepee. I mean, that was just kind of like the reason for everyone to show up, but it was like a super cool hangout and get to meet everyone kind of a lot more personally than just kind of like a, hey, doing a great job online. And it was like, it was super cool to be able to meet everyone like that in person.
Yeah. Cause I think when you guys, you talked about Derek helping Derek, and I was just, I had this envisionment that you were like, you stroke my beard, I'll strike you, I'll stroke yours.
Yep, that's exactly how it went.
Because Derek's got a wicked beard as well.
He does have a giant beard.
So, you know, and I think that tells a lot, you know, like you were helping Derek with his videos and, you know, helping with the knife stuff. Like it's a always like, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. Yeah, it's not intentional, if you know what I mean. You're being genuine. You're like, I actually want to teach this guy some stuff because I think it
really kind of comes back to I'm going to stroke Jimmy's beard a little bit more, but him being so open for me to go into his shop, it's like I felt a duty to kind of pay it forward. And before I guess I met Jimmy, I probably wouldn't have been as open to be like, yeah, come by the house. Like, just, yeah, come by, like, have that connection. And it was like, I was almost inspired to kind of force myself to open up. And by doing so, it opened up a friendship and it opened up opportunities. And I mean, I was talking to Derek yesterday, like, our relationship and friendship is still there and it's thriving, which is pretty awesome. And like, at the same time, my mom needed work on her house and I knew Derek was a contractor or new contractors at the time. And I was like, hey, can you sort this out that my mom needs? Like, she needs like a new bathroom and a couple, and he was like, yeah, totally. And so then there was a connection there. And so like, now it's like this like multi-layered connection where he was like helping out my mom and then I would help him out with his video. And then our friendship really kind of snowballed after that.
Hmm. I love the fact that you talked about Jimmy and his openness like rubbed off on you. I think that says a lot, you know, like we all want to be better slightly, but often we don't know how to be better until we see it. And you're like, oh, I want to be like more like Jimmy and just be happy, because you see how he really is and how happy it is to let people in and how kind of like enriches his life as well. Right. By having these people around.
As of right now, hopefully, thankfully, he's never had an issue with letting people kind of in his little world. And it's been awesome because it's like, you never know who's going to walk through the door that like, I mean, it could be a friendship, lifelong friendship. It could be someone with an opportunity that you could take and will develop into something awesome later down the line. But just seeing his ability to open or just be warm and opening to just like, I mean, it's just, to me, it's still like, this guy is such a busy dude, like shooting stuff and at the time and still doing installs at people's apartments, where it's like he took the time out of his day to hang out with me and whoever else wanted to come down. And I mean, it was pretty impressive and kind of like, wow, that's really cool. That's a trait I would like to try to emulate, because it seems like not only is it good for your, I guess, person to like your ability to kind of evolve into a person and be more welcoming to other people and being able to like help out other people, which is just, I don't know, it's just a really neat thing. And it really has kind of paid its dividends. Not that I was looking for it, but kind of the karmic payoff is like, yeah, you get to meet all these really cool people once you kind of force yourself out of that safety zone of like, I don't want to talk to that person because it might, I don't know, I don't want to bother them.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, a little bit like you told me a story just recently about where Jackman was reaching 100,000 subscribers and he got the chance to make a video in one of the YouTube studios. And you know, he roped you into that. I was wondering if you wanted to share that story, because I think that's really interesting how, you know, easy it was to like just, you know, pick up the phone and say, hey, like, do you want to be involved in this? Hey, do you want to be involved in this? And then you guys just all come together.
Yeah. And part of that, I neglected I forgot to explain, which I think we'll touch upon in a little bit later in this podcast, but through my work at the time, Carolina Shoes, I was, after kind of developing a relationship with Jackman, I was like, oh, this is kind of hand in hand or foot to foot.
Yeah.
Carolina, this is like a perfect fit. Sorry with the bad puns. This is a perfect fit that like, if Carolina were to sponsor Jackman, then we could maybe kind of see how that develops and then maybe expand in supporting other people. And so for about a year, I pitched like, hey, we should really support this guy because he's really blowing up. Like anytime I would come back to them, I'm like, he just got another 10,000 subscribers. And so they eventually sponsored him. And once that happened, it was a pretty good success. And so they were like, whatever you want to do with him or Jet or any ideas you have, go at it. Like just do it. So they were like cool enough to like pay my way to go to New York to help Jackman out. Hmm. So I forgot to talk about that part, but do you want me to explain that whole story?
I mean, it's up to you. It's your podcast. You can tell.
Well, it's your podcast. I know we look the same, but no. So with that, Paul reached out to me and he was like, hey, listen, I'm about to pass 100,000 subscribers. Would you like to help me write this skit? And he included Pat Lapp into it too. And I was like, yeah, that's awesome. I love to write comedy. And so, or I like to attempt to write comedy.
Yeah.
And so like we kind of, for a couple of weeks, we just kind of like texted each other because Paul moved at that point. And we kind of wrote this whole silly sketch of like him waking up and checking the comments on his YouTube, which you never should do that. And it's all negative and unsubscribe. And he just wanted to go to his happy place. And when you reach 100,000 subscribers, YouTube lets you record lets you use their facilities in either New York or LA and lets you kind of have like carte blanche on any of their fancy red cameras. And I was like, hell yeah, I'm in. Like, I want to play with all this stuff. And so we wrote this thing. And then during the whole writing process, we were like, oh, we should see if Jimmy wants to get involved. It would be kind of fun to have him make an appearance. Texted him and he was like, yeah, sure, absolutely. Like, I'll be there. And we were like, wow, that was easy.
Yeah.
And so at the same time, Derek was at Jimmy's farmhouse for the weekend. And so they, both of them drove to New York City and then showed up at the studio. And we were like, all right, you guys can be kind of like the, I forget what they were called, the two old guys from the Muppets. And basically just bust Jackman's balls as he's building this giant Adirondack chair. And so we got to spend the day with, like, we all just kind of hung out in the studio. It was like this really super fun day. We got dinner. We actually visited Jimmy's old shop at that point, and we tried to like Jimmy the lock to kind of like go down there and kind of sneak in. It was kind of fun to see the whole place empty. But yeah, that was like a super cool, another kind of crossroads where like everyone kind of showed up and it kind of worked as well as we wanted it to work. And we thought it was just a really fun time to like, Pat was there, I was there. So it was a really fun time.
Hmm. And I mean, you never know what can happen from just meeting people, right? You guys get together and, you know, shoot this one video and, you know, becomes like a bond there, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, without being able to say too much, I'm sure if you kind of dug, I'm sure you could probably figure out what I'm talking about. But at one point we randomly just all took a photo in this Adirondack chair. It was me, Jackman, Derek, Pat, and Paul. And we all just kind of sat in this giant Adirondack chair and it kind of fit all of us. Took a photo, Paul put it online, and like someone that works in the TV industry reached out to us, and stuff has evolved where hopefully something will come out of it.
That sounds pretty exciting.
yeah, it's I can't say too much, but yeah, it seems like it's something cool might happen.
That's awesome. So I mean, I think that just shows you like that's what it really takes, you know, like making sure you're always providing value. Like in my opinion, like you providing value for helping Paul write the script and then, you know, helping with the camera stuff and then of course networking outside of that, you know, with Jimmy and Derek coming in and, you know, and Pat helping as well. Like there's always like a give and take sort of thing going on there. So
yeah, and I mean while I was there, Pat like it was really funny because Pat actually came here to this apartment. I'm in Jackman's old apartment. If I didn't make it clear, like we moved from the top floor down to the Jackman layer. And well, before the whole connection and the whole Maker scene happened, Pat Lapp actually visited here, and I remember seeing him here. Had no idea who he was. Just kind of introduced myself. I was like, "Hey, French guy. I don't know who you are, but hey, you're a nice guy." And then eventually, like when I went into the Facebook group, and once Paul left, I kind of introduced myself. Paul kind of got me into the first Facebook group. It's fractured, and there's many of them now. But I remember Pat's first comment when I introduced myself was, "Hey, I farted in your shop," and I was like, "Oh my God, that was him." So that was really funny. So yeah. And then because when Pat was there, it was awesome because he's also a video producer. So we had that connection where like, I mean, the whole day we were kind of like kids in a candy shop at the YouTube studio, like playing around with the Red camera and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that, I mean, just being able to have that other connection with Pat was even like an awesome thing. So
let's get on with the rest of the podcast. Let's talk about video production. Now, I mentioned that you work for Total Boat, and you also talked about that you're working for Carolina Boots. Mm-hmm. How did you get into video production in the first place?
So way back in like 1994, when I was going to be a freshman in high school, I remember being able to like pick your classes, and I remember this vividly where it said like television production. And I was like, oh, that could be really fun. Not thinking that I could do it for a living, but it would just be kind of fun because my parents had a VHS camera and I always used to make like little stop motion things. I was always drawn towards it. So it was kind of a natural thing where I was like, oh, I could take this and I can maybe kind of get school credit for that. That's kind of down my alley. So I signed up for TV production, and first day, like I didn't realize it was actually one of the better TV production programs in my state, which I completely lucked out there. The first day my TV teacher said, "You're never going to watch TV the same way again." And I didn't really know what that meant until I started learning and seeing the principles and skills it took to be a camera person and then an editor and then being able to like manipulate footage and stuff like that. So I took TV for 4 years straight in TV production. And then right after that, I remember going to a school fair, like a college fair. And they were like, this college, this tiny little college in Boston specializes in video. And I was like, that exists? Sure, sign me up. And then I signed up for that. So I did TV production through, that was a 2-year school. Then after that, like I just kind of kept my mind going with it. And then after that, I worked with a buddy who I graduated with who used to shoot local and live bands, local and national live bands. So like I worked with, like if you get the System of a Down Toxicity CD, it came with a DVD. If you check the credits on there, I'm like on the credits of that as like one of the 4 or 5 camera people there, which was really cool.
Oh my God, I'm gonna worship you.
and then I was able to do like the Dropkick Murphys in Boston on St. Patty's Day, and awesome. that was like the coolest, most fun video project I did up to that point. And then having all this stuff, I knew like having all this good material as a resume or a demo reel, I could then kind of see what was out there and try to get other jobs showing like, check out this stuff I've done. And then like, and then after that, my buddy worked at Reebok and Adidas, and I was like, "Hey, do you guys need any video help?" He was like, "Yeah, sure." And then got a job there for a couple of years, kind of pivoted in like with my video stuff, had a lot of like shoe and like fan accessory videos that I produce for them. Had that for a couple of years, had a really kind of diverse demo reel. Then I noticed that this job for at the time, it was, I mean, it still is, it was called H.H. Brown. And it was kind of like a blanket company that had 20 different shoe brands that were looking for a video producer. And I was like, oh, this is, I'm a shoe in for this.
Oh, my God.
Sorry. Bad. No, and then I kind of parlayed that into another job in the shoe industry. And then kind of it, that I was there for 12 years, but through that time, the whole Carolina thing kind of popped up. And then that kind of perfect storm of perfect timing helped.
And I mean, again, going back to like you being able to help Paul get sponsored, like by being that inner person within the company going, you should really check out Paul. Like, you know?
Yeah. I was like, I like popped my head out. Like, Google's be like, did you contact him yet? And then, we didn't luck out because Paul is super talented, but like the video that we sponsored was his bench video. And it ended up getting over 1 million views. And then the second one was the 100 shot glasses made out of pallet video, which literally broke Reddit that they had to shut the comments off because people were just like, if you use it, you'll die. And so like,
that got
another 1 million views. So like, it was just like, we found this golden boy that just kept getting millions of views. And so that definitely helped kind of, I guess, both of us in the kind of bigger picture of Carolina.
Yeah, I remember Paul talking about that on another podcast.
Yeah.
About the whole thing. Obviously, those pallets he used didn't contain those chemicals, but anyway.
Yeah, we had to put stickers on there saying not to actually use to drink out of. This is just for a novelty shot glass. Do not drink out of them, just for legal purposes.
Oh my God. Now you got involved with Total Boat after Carolina Boots, and I think that's really cool because like Total Boat, is really involved in the maker community. I was just saying to you before, I was like looking at their Instagram profile and it's pretty much only maker related content, which is something really kind of cool from a company that's called Total Boat.
Yeah. It's a name that doesn't really kind of show itself like anything besides a complete boat, but, again, another just, I mean, I feel like Forrest Gump a lot where I just kind of somehow fall ass backwards into these situations where I kind of like look around and be like, am I supposed to be here? Because I mean, everyone knows what happened in March with the whole COVID thing. And like many companies, unfortunately, I got furloughed because I mean, everyone thought the world was stopping and it kind of did. Mm-hmm. So I was furloughed for about a month and I get this message from Jeff Shaw, who coincidentally I met at Jimmy's teepee event a couple of years back. And I kept in contact with just in the maker community. Like he's always like any woodworking show I'll go to, any event that is local or even a little further than local, he's usually there. And it's like, he was always super nice. And so it's just one of those things, like he contacted me and was like, listen, we're looking for a video guy. And you were kind of like you and Pat were the two names that came up, and Pat's in Canada. So, I mean, he's kind of out of the running. So I was like, sure, I'll come down. Like I got nothing else better to do because, I'm not working. And then I went down there a couple times, shot some video, and they offered me a full-time gig, and it's been amazing there. Like it is like I couldn't work with nicer people. Like it really is like a dream job, which is awesome. Like I'm never take any of this for granted because like I am a lucky SOB.
I think I feel like it comes back down to networking again, because if you hadn't connected with people and networked at Jimmy's at that time, you wouldn't have met that one guy who then, you know, put you in contact over a period of time. You know, obviously there's a relationship there.
Yeah.
And wouldn't have put you in that situation. So I think there's so many advantages of networking
beyond the just like, hey, you know, nice to meet you sort of
thing, right? In this community, a lot of the times and a lot of the people, it's like they kind of leave their egos at the door, and it doesn't really matter if you have a million subscribers or one subscriber. Mm. It's just like, hey, what do you make? Come on in. Tell us about what you make. Oh, that's cool. I've tried to do that. I failed at it. Teach me how to do it better. And it's like, I've met so many people because of that. And it's just the coolest thing. Like, it's like this like secret awesome club that like, when you think of Facebook and internet and talking to people, it's usually a negative thing, but this is like the one kind of, I'll almost say like bulletproof beacon of like, this is just an awesome group of people that are like-minded and kind of are awesome no matter where you are and your status in kind of social media, quote unquote.
Right. I wanted to talk a little bit about, you mentioned in your early studying years and the teacher told you you'd never watch, you know, TV or films the same ever again. Has it completely ruined like the way you look at stuff?
It has ruined. I will say, I don't know if ruined is the word, but it has changed my visual consumption of every video I've watched since 1994, because it's for me to watch a movie, I usually have to watch it two or three times for me to really ingest the story, because my eyes now are just figuring out like where they shot this, what camera did they use, what kind of lens they used, how they got that shot. Is that a drone? Is that a helicopter? Is that CG? Like, that's a really cool cut where they like moved the camera and cut something right at this. And it's like that kind of beautiful mind thing where like all the math comes in.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that when I'm watching video, because it's like, I'm just watching it visually and I literally physically can't watch like a story as complicated as Game of Thrones. Cause I'm just like, who's that guy? Oh, I completely missed that, but that's a really cool shot. How did they get that shot? But, oh, I saw the microphone in one of the shots, like, or that little like coffee mug that they left out. Like, that would be the thing I'd be like, oh, how did they miss that? Like, the coffee mug. Yeah. And so it's like, I'm just visually looking at that, which then I can kind of like, when I make a video, the shooting aspect and editing aspect is I don't have to think about it anymore, because it's like, I've done it so many times and for so long, for so many years, that the shooting part and the editing parts, that's the, I don't want to say easy part, but like the making and thinking of the unique ideas is the part that it's more difficult for me.
Hmm. It made me think about like Game of Thrones. It made me think about one of my previous guests, Kieran Donnelly from Make, Fail, Repeat. And he was an extra on Game of Thrones for about 6 years. And he had never even like read the books, and he was an extra, you know, basically. Yeah. Said, if you lived in Ireland and you had a beard and long hair, you're in yeah, Game of Thrones.
Half beard will travel.
Yeah. And so, you know, he was carrying the book around, and I was like, I wonder if Graz saw the book hanging out of his pocket, you know?
Oh,
that's the Game of Thrones book just hanging out of that extra's pocket.
My wife is like I will say this lovingly, a bigger nerd than me when it comes to like stuff like that. And she read all the books before the show. She was always like, I read them before it was a show. But through other connections, one of my best friends who I actually went through the TV program with ended up in Hollywood, and her husband ended up editing all the video for the live Game of Thrones like orchestra tour that they did.
Oh yeah.
And so he did all the videos. And again, because I haven't watched it, I guess there's a hall of dead people or like severed heads or something. I don't, have you seen Game of Thrones?
I've seen all the episodes, but I haven't seen.
Okay. There's like heads and jars or something. I don't know, like the hall of the dead or something.
Yeah. Hmm.
He asked my wife, he was like, I know you're a fan. Can I put your face in one of the faces in the, and she was like, oh my God, yeah, that would be the coolest thing ever. So I took a photo of her and sent it to him. And then a couple months later, they went to the live show, and I was like, "Oh my God, there's your face right there!" And you're like while the orchestra's playing, I was like, "You were officially part of the Game of Thrones universe." And she was over the moon with that.
I've never been able to watch video the same. Like I always, since starting to make video content, I've been very like adamant of watching what other people are doing. Not only like looking at my maker world that I sort of keep control of, but if I happen to stumble across another YouTube video or, you know, even to something on TV or movies, I'm often thinking about like the techniques they're using. And I'll be, oh, I really love the way they did that cross zoom there. Or I wonder how I could like use that technique in my videos because I think that looked cool. And I feel like I'm getting a bit of a handle on how to make videos now. And considering it's been about a year and a half now of making videos. What is something you think most makers can improve on their videos?
I mean, when it comes down to it, with any video, it really, if you break it down to the most basic form, it comes down to storytelling. I mean, if you take a guy like Casey Neistat and what he has accomplished through his channel, which is just, I don't even understand how he does it. But I mean, he can take a fairly mundane day in California and tell the story that will keep your attention for 10 minutes and have these amazing camera shots that he does all by himself and then edits the video. And it's like, that's incredible, but it really comes down to storytelling. So for me, I like to break my stuff down with a couple rules where it's like, there can't be more than like 10 seconds without either a voiceover or a joke or some movement, so you never get bored watching my videos. I don't want to show you, watch, I miter cut this piece of wood 7 times. It's like, you don't need to see that. It's either I'm going to show you once and say I did it 6 more times, or I'm going to show you 7, like bing, 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 like real right. fast.
Yeah.
And then just keep the story flowing with either explanation or jokes or something just to kind of hook the viewer in. And once you have them, like, your duty is to keep them and to keep them entertained, whether they're going to build the final product or not. I've had people watch my knife grinder jig that have no idea what that is, like what you do with it. They have no idea that existed, but they were like, "Hey, great video. I love your jokes in it." And it was like, okay, mission accomplished for that guy. But then I'll have another guy be like, "You suck. You have a stupid face." And then like, oh,
I take that personally since we're yeah. similar.
Your face is stupid. But it really comes down to storytelling and thinking, not just do I find this entertaining? Will I? I don't want to say try to dumb it down, but you have to really make it so even people who aren't going to perhaps make the project, you're entertaining them anyway. I mean, that's how I go about that kind of problem.
Yeah, I'm going to tell everyone about this episode. I think it's 123 of the Made for Profit podcast. It really gives an outline on how to tell a story and how to basically make video that engages people on YouTube. So go have a listen to that one, guys. I got heaps out of it. I wrote, I don't know, 3 pages of notes basically from that podcast. It's the guy comes with so much tips and tricks and things to think about when you're producing your videos. So that's worth something to check out. So that's 123 on the Made for Profit podcast. So go check that out.
Cool.
I wanted to just a little bit talk about any other tips or tricks you had for people besides the old storytelling, make sure you tell a good story. Is there something that they can do to like check that their video is good or hitting the mark?
Yeah, like another kind of law, I guess I'll say I kind of apply to my videos are, I try, once I shoot everything and I edit everything and I do my voiceover, I then try to watch my video with no audio to see if I can visually tell the story of what I'm doing without any explanation of just visually. My explanation of the video is through video exclusively. I'll watch that and go, okay, I think I can figure out if someone who has no idea what I'm doing watches this, I think they'll be able to start at A and end at Z and totally understand what I'm doing. Hmm. And then I'll do the opposite where I'll just listen to the voiceover and not watch the video and go like, okay, I'm explaining, I have to cut it this way, I have to do it this way, and then do the A through Z and be like, I think I can figure out what you're doing without having to visually watch it. And then once you mash the two, I think they really complement each other and then kind of form a full kind of story and explanation.
Yeah, I love that. And I think for me personally, like turning off the audio is just as simple as like, I don't know the percentage, but it's a ridiculous amount of people watch like Instagram videos with no sound.
Yeah. I mean, it's as a fan of film, like I love silent movies, and they had to figure out how to tell a story without talking and just through music and visuals. And that's a completely different art. Like we can make a silent movie if we want to, but it was just, that was the way to tell a story. And I really think that's the absolute core of storytelling is the visual storytelling. And then you add audio to it, and then it's like a completely formed idea and kind of instructional thing that you can kind of go like, here you go. It's entertaining and instructional.
Yeah. Thanks for giving us a little instruction. I got something from that, so that's awesome. Let's go into the rapid fire five. You ready?
All right.
Fill in the blank. Creativity is
the ability to ad lib quickly. No. I think creativity is something that I don't want to say everyone has, but most people have, and something that if you work on it, you can improve it. And the more you ingest, the more you can work on your creativity, and the better you can hone your craft. And I think the more kind of abstract you think, the better your creativity will be.
Yeah, that makes me think about the book written by Alan Gannett, The Creative Curve. He talks about like creative geniuses, you know, in exclamation marks. They absorb content for 4 hours a day minimum. So yeah. They're taking in information all the time to become more creative.
You know, yeah, like
when they get like, to do the work.
With that, I'll take that kind of lead and kind of the way a lot of people are always like, how did you learn how to do that? And I'm not the most talented person with my hands. It's like I'm learning. I'm never going to master anything. I'm just always constantly learning. I'm always a student, but I try to watch as many videos as I can, woodworking, leatherworking, metalworking, knife making, all of those. And just, I found that I subconsciously index some points where I'll watch a million videos and not even know that I've absorbed some of the knowledge. And when I'm in the shop working on something, I'll do something and go, oh, I learned that from so-and-so. And right. Now I'm doing this. I equate it to when you're studying a foreign language and then you hear two people have a conversation in that language, and all of a sudden your brain kind of clicks on and goes, what? I know what they're talking about. And you're not even like going like, wait, what did he say? What did he say? It just a switch turns on. And to me, by just making your brain a sponge, like a dry sponge, and trying to absorb as many of these techniques and knowledge through YouTube, that's how my brain works. And then I'll kind of subconsciously index a lot of them and then kind of do it and not even think about it. And then once I do it, I go, oh, I learned that from Jimmy or Berkey or Jackman or Pat or Derek or something like that.
Mm. Yeah. That's exactly how I work as well. Like I'll just see something, you know, on a walk, for example. I've shared this one before, like the track in my voice controlled sofa beer fridge that drives the beers out. That I was going for a walk. I was stuck on how to come with a solution. There was a guy in the neighborhood, like driving his snowmobile up and down this hill to flatten it out for the sleds and stuff to go down. And he stopped for a minute and I looked at the tracks and I went, yes, that's yeah. It. That's it. You know, and it only, you know, I didn't know if it was going to work, but I got this idea that it was like a track with a cog and these like, yeah. So I went back in the workshop and started mocking up ideas. And then eventually I came with a mixed solution to what I originally came up with. So, I mean, I think that's what it takes is often you go out there and absorb the ideas and then all of a sudden they come together.
Yeah. A lot of the times I share your sentiment exactly. Like you just kind of have to go out and look at stuff, and then it may not be an obvious sign of like those tractor things just take that thing that you just saw, index it in your brain, and then kind of eventually if a problem comes up and you go, oh wait, I can connect the that works perfectly. And sometimes I'll even misinterpret stuff, which then will give me an idea. Like I can't think of an example, but like I'll either mishear or misread or like quickly look at something and interpret it as something else and go like, oh, that would be really cool if I like improved on that. But then I look at it again and go, oh wait, that wasn't even what I was thinking of. But now I have this weird augmented idea that is like came from something I misinterpreted, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. That's the crazy part of the brain when we store all these information in there and it just all of a sudden pops out. This was supposed to be a rapid fire five, so we'll get on with the next.
Yeah, okay. I won't be verbose next time.
What's something that people get wrong about you?
How tall I am in real life. No. I don't know. That's something that they get wrong about me. Maybe my last name.
Oh my God.
A lot of people think I'm taller in my YouTube videos and then meet me. And then I look up at them and say, hi, I'm Graz. And then they look down at me and go, I thought you were a lot taller. So.
I've heard Jimmy and them give you shit about being small.
Oh yeah, no, it's fine. I've take it to heart. It's total. No, I mean, no. To me, it you know, you get a if you're busting balls, you expect it back at you, and it makes you sharper and makes your jokes funnier.
Actually, how high are you? Because I'm 6'4".
How high am I? Well, yeah. I mean, depends on.
How tall are you?
Sorry, or not? No, I'm 5'5". And yeah, with a pompadour and some Carolina boots on, I'm easily 5'10". So I think I'm 5'6.1593 No, like 5'6". I think last time I checked.
All right. So I'm gonna stand at least.
Wow. Yeah, stand behind me like 3 feet, so I'm normal height with everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
It's funny because Jackman, he's a big dude, and yeah. Our basement is just not Jackman size. So I have a picture of him standing normal and his eyes are like in the foundation of the house where I can like jump and be like, oh, this is a gross size. This is perfect.
All right. What's your favorite thing to do when you're not making stuff and being creative?
It's funny because I mean, this is not a correct answer, but lately I think because we're kind of stuck in our houses a lot, I've really got into cooking, and I know making is kind of leaking into that. Cause it's like, I love to take these ingredients, put them all together. And at the end you have this completely new thing where you're like, wow, that just tastes really good. And I love the way that, I don't know, you just kind of work with your hands and build this thing that didn't exist. But I know that wasn't the answer you're looking for. I like driving. Driving is fun. I just got a relatively new car, so I enjoy driving. So yeah. I'll take that as the answer.
Yeah, that'll work. Yeah. What project is completely priceless that you could never sell?
That is a good question. I, again, you're going to hate me at this, but I think to me, it's one of those I would prefer to sell all my stuff because then I could just make it again. Like I've learned how to do it and then I can make a better version next time. I know there's sentimental, like, oh, I made this, but it's one of those things. It's like, if I make it or I screw it up, I can always just do it again. And probably it will come out better the next time. So nothing I've made real, I mean, unless it's a gift that I've given to someone as like a birthday gift or Christmas gift, there's nothing that I feel that is too priceless to like, I'll just give away and then I'll just make another one for myself, which is kind of the awesome nature of making.
Yeah. Ever since I started asking that question, that's been a majority of the answer, because I think it's very interesting with the makers. We tend to like the process rather than the end result.
Yeah.
So, you know, people are not specifically attached to the things they make, right?
Yeah. It is like a thing where it's like, I don't know, like I said, it's just, I'd rather give it out to someone because it'll put a smile on their face. And then I'll just make if I make a kitchen knife, I'm like, here, you have it. It'll just give me now I have to make another one and I'll just make a better one than you got. So.
All right. This is the last question. What does happiness look like?
Happiness looks like that is a good question. I know I'm sure the majority of the people will give the same answer, but to me, happiness looks like the thing you just made that you're just staring at and you're just happy that it came out and you just want to keep looking at it. Like I think Jimmy said, like, it's the coolest thing to like when you build something and you go to bed, the first thing you want to do is like get up and look at the thing and be like, I made this. And like there is like this weird this feeling that you can't tap into easily. But when you do something that you're really proud of, that's like a happiness that like, it's a very personal happiness that you're like, look at this thing. It's awesome. And you spin it around like, oh man, it's great. So I think that's a happiness in my eyes.
Yeah. I've talked about this too, where you like, you kind of finished a project, but you go into bed. So you switch off the workshop lights and you close the door, you put the key in, you lock it. You take the key out, you put the key back in, you unlock it, you turn the lights back on, go look, just to look at it again.
And then you're like, I'll just take a picture of it so then I can look at it in bed. It's an awesome feeling. I don't think a lot of people understand that feeling because they might be too scared or hesitant or don't realize that they do have the skills to do it. And it's like make something easy. Like put the bar down pretty low, step over it and go like, I made that. That's awesome. Like make a cutting board. It's like, just get a couple pieces of wood, make them straight, glue them together. And then all of a sudden you have this cutting board and you're like, it's a cutting board. I know it's basic, but I made it and it's mine. There's many like it, but this one's mine. And I can now, I'm a woodworker and now I can, the sky's the limit at that point.
Right. I mean, you got to start somewhere, don't you?
Exactly. Like there's no shame in like doing simple projects. Cause like once you do that, it's like, uh-oh, like I got the bug. It's like turn a pen and then you're like, oh no, what have I done? I gotta make 100 more of these. Then I gotta make bowls and then I gotta make other stuff. And then I gotta get into machining and all that stuff. And it's an awesome feeling that I wish more people would kind of push themselves to get in their shop or do even the most basic woodworking or metalworking to have that feeling. It's I think if a lot more people had it, a lot more people would be in a better mood, to put it simply.
Yeah, probably right there. for sure. Let's wrap this thing up. I thought it was really great to hear your story about networking with some of the as I called them, maker elite. But I mean, they are just normal guys. And I think for me, hearing that you always provided some sort of value to them is the real reason why you're friends and, you know, you help each other out. And I think for those who are listening, you know, you don't have to be friends with Jimmy. Like, you can find that guy in your local neighborhood that does something similar and connect with him, network with him or her, I should say, and, you know, provide that value for them. And you never know what can come of it. And I think that shows if you put yourself out there and start to network with people that have similar ideas about what they enjoy to do, I think it can go pretty far. So, and the other thing is, I hope you guys got some little tips and tricks for the video production side of things. And I want to thank Graz for coming on the show. Appreciate your time.
Awesome. Yeah. And I just want to add to what you just said. To me, some people may interpret networking as then like a business thing, or how do I get ahead?
Right.
And it really comes down to just be a good person. And I don't know. I believe in karma, that it good will come back at you. But I mean, you have to be I think good initially, and then see what happens from that, and just be a good person.
Yeah,
treat the other people the way you want to be treated. It's the golden rule. And I really believe in that.
Yeah. The pure intentions, right? As well. Right.
Yeah. Just try to be the best person you can be. I know in these times it's tough, and especially with whatever is going on right now, but yeah, just try to be a good person, and hopefully the universe will kind of pay it back to you.
Yeah, that's something I believe in too. I want to thank you guys all so much for listening. I hope you guys got something out of this episode. If you're not following Graz, there's a whole heap of links in the show notes. Go check them out and be sure to follow him. If you want to support me, you can be one of the cool kids and join the GA Nation by heading over to Patreon. Otherwise, you can support me just as much and all its amazing guests by just simply reposting, sharing this podcast, or by mentioning me by name to all your cool maker friends like Jimmy, Jackman, Paul, and yeah, all the other cool guys. Otherwise, you know, I'd love to also hear your feedback, guys. Please send me your DMs to @GarageAvenger on Instagram. Until next time, keep pushing yourself, keep ballsing up things, keep learning, get inspired, and I'll catch you on the flip side.
See you later.
Well, we're done.
Stop.